6 years ago, BBC Panorama released a film called Is Labour Anti-Semitic, which was effectively the death knell for Jeremy Corbyn as leader of the Labour Party. 6 years on, that film is discredited. And in the wake of genocide, the people who for 4 years tormented and slanted and smeared Jeremy Corbyn as an anti-Semite stand exposed as being anything but the anti-racist campaigners they claimed to be. Even as this genocide has been ongoing and as the bodies of small children have mounted up, leading figures in Labour Friends of Israel, Margaret Hodge, Louise Ellman and Ruth Smeath, now Baroness Anderson, have continued to visit Israel and to be photographed with President Herzog, a man who has said there is no such thing as innocent civilians in Gaza.
It's an entire nation out there that is responsible. And we will fight until we'll break their backbone.
Very recently, Luciana Berger was there and again posed with President Herzog. There they are visiting a state in the midst of that state committing genocide, the ultimate racist act. These are the very people who for 4 years were lauded by the entirety of the British media as valiant champions of the struggle against racism.
Anti-racism, against all, and social justice, the values which I hold really dear. I cannot remain in a party that I have today come to the sickening conclusion is institutionally anti-Semitic.
A book came out earlier this year called Get In, and it's by Patrick Maguire and Gabriel Pogrund, who are reporters at The Times. And it is the inside account of Starmer's rise to power. If we in the Labour files were portraying the issue of anti-Semitism having been cynically exploited in order to bring down Jeremy Corbyn, in Get In, they go much further. They describe it as a conspiracy, a conspiracy without precedent in the history of the Labour Party. People will remember Rachel Riley, the Countdown presenter, as playing an absolutely central role in the campaign against Jeremy Corbyn. One of the fascinating things in Pogrund and Maguire's book, Get In, is they reveal how she was secretly, their word, recruited by the Jewish Labour movement to front a campaign against the left-wing website, The Canary. Essentially what these people did was that they redefined anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism. And of course, once you've done that, you're going to find anti-Semites everywhere. 6 years ago, BBC Panorama released a film called Is Labour Anti-Semitic? It was extremely hostile to Corbyn. It portrayed him, if not as an anti-Semite, then as someone who had permitted anti-Semitism to flourish within the Labour Party.
The party that I joined over a decade ago is now institutionally racist.
The anti-Semitic abuse I received was what I was subjected to every single day. Telling me Hitler was right, telling me Hitler did not go far enough.
3 years later, at Al Jazeera's investigative unit, we did a series called The Labour Files. We really destroyed it journalistically. We showed that one crucial email had been so ruthlessly edited as to distort its meaning. And I think possibly most importantly, we showed that the two most damning examples of people being anti-Semitic were simply untrue.
That's an absolute lie. I didn't say that.
The BBC admitted that the Izzy Lenga story, Hitler was right, Hitler didn't go far enough, was wrong. She never said it. Other than that, you just got that the programme met the editorial standards of the BBC, which, if true, is very worrying about the editorial standards of the BBC. Now, let's just look at the Jewish labour movement. It was absolutely central to all of this. Almost all of the anonymous interviewees in the BBC Panorama came from the Jewish labour movement. Now, I have gone through the Jewish labour movement's X feed since October the 7th. There is not a single word of compassion or concern for Palestinians. There is not a single word of criticism of the actions of the Israeli government. There's not even any criticism of Netanyahu, which is perfectly safe territory. I've looked too at the X feeds and the public pronouncements of the other people who played a leading role in this campaign against Corbyn. Luciana Berger, Louise Ellman, Margaret Hodge, Ruth Smeath, now Baroness Anderson, Rachel Riley, Tracy Ann Oberman, John Mann. All of these people, pretty much the same as the JLM. You get the very, very occasional bit of the most perfunctory sort of hand-wringing. Other than that, no criticism at all of the Israelis. Virtually no expression of compassion or sympathy for the Palestinians at all. With others, it is even worse. If you take Ian Austin, former Labour MP, elevated to the Lords by Boris Johnson for his services in bringing down Jeremy Corbyn, and who has been appointed by Keir Starmer as trade envoy to Israel. For a time, Ian Austin had, as his ex-profile picture, the words, "Let Israel finish the job." You have David Mentzer, who appears on our screens all the time. He is a spokesman for the Israeli government. He's actually the man, day after day, up there on screen, justifying what the Israelis are doing in the Gaza Strip.
IDF have carefully struck using precise munitions to mitigate any civilian harm in the area.
He is a former director of Labour Friends of Israel. And with others, it gets even worse. In the Labour files, we expose Jonathan Hoffman and Richard Millett. These two men were really the sort of foot soldiers of the campaign against Jeremy Corbyn. They were the ones that were coming up with the stories day after day. We exposed them as having links to the extreme right, as having been at one time very close to the English Defence League.
Jonathan Hoffman, he is photographed alongside Roberta Moore, the founder of the EDL's Jewish division. She will later express her admiration for Anders Breivik, the neo-Nazi who murdered 77 people in Norway.
These people are aggressive champions of Israel's actions in the Gaza Strip. When the entire family of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh was wiped out by the Israelis, this included four infant children. Richard Millett celebrated the fact and said, "I hope this hurt so, so much." These people were not campaigners against racism. They were advocates for the state of Israel, and in some cases, very extreme advocates for the state of Israel. And the fact that the British media simply uncritically bought into their framing of events for 4 years is an absolute disgrace journalistically. On one level, this is all ancient history, and it's very painful ancient history. On the other hand, the genocide in Gaza shows that it's an issue that just doesn't go away. And it is also something, you know, like a rocket in Gaza, it's been battle-tested and shown to work. It will be wheeled out, the anti-Semitism thing will be wheeled out again and again and again to destroy figures of the radical left.
Some Jewish New York City voters have expressed concerns, anti-Semitism concerns, about Mamdani.
And they are afraid that your mayorship would actually lead to increased anti-Semitism.
He's Jewish, lives in New York, he's got a young family. If this guy wins, you're leaving?
There's a thing which I refer to as James O'Brien syndrome, the LBC presenter. James O'Brien has been a very strong critic of the Israelis since October the 7th. Previously, he was one of Jeremy Corbyn's sternest critics and absolutely bought into the whole anti-Semitism narrative.
How did you deal with the knowledge that the party was being portrayed, in my view rightly, I don't know your view yet, as being a harbour for anti-Semitism? Talk to me about the anti-Semitism. It must sadden you to see the party covered in criticism of that particular ilk.
No, I have to ask for your response to Jeremy Corbyn's claim that the scale of the problem was dramatically overstated for political reasons.
I have no words for that response today.
He clearly sees absolutely no contradiction between those two positions, but they are absolutely linked. For 4 years, every time anyone put their head above the parapet for Palestine, we were told they were an anti-Semite. The Palestinian cause was delegitimized and indeed demonized for 4 years during the Corbyn years. And that played a crucial role in creating the sort of emotional framework once the genocide began. And it helps to explain this extraordinary mystery of how the British political and journalistic establishment is able to sit and watch the daily slaughter of Palestinian children, day after day. And yes, oh, it's sad and we'd rather it ended and so on, but is basically prepared to tolerate it continuing. The sort of desensitization of people towards Palestinians as human beings, the demonization, the delegitimization of the Palestinian struggle during the Corbyn years played a part in that. Throughout the genocide in Gaza, so many of us watching the BBC have felt that it was failing hopelessly in its task of accurately reporting what was going on in Gaza. We now have a report from the Centre for Media Monitoring. It breaks down forensically and empirically the language that the BBC uses about the two sides. It absolutely spells out in forensic detail that we were right to have those suspicions. What emerged for me above all is that the BBC still regards impartiality as consisting of coming down somewhere halfway between the two sides. If you've got two political positions, if you end up halfway between, then you're doing your job right. If we're being shouted at by both sides, then we're doing our job right. Of course, that's not the case. You should be guided by the hard facts and by journalism, not simply falling halfway between two political positions, particularly since the two positions you're falling halfway between are genocide, the perpetrators of genocide, and the victims of genocide. To fall halfway between those two things is a sort of completely spurious impartiality. I would say as well, I think it is deep, deep in the marrow of the sort of people who run the BBC and the sort of people who work in media and politics generally, and so deep that I think they're unaware of it. They just take it as given that the Israelis are us and the Palestinians are them. There is a broader problem that Western civilization has to confront. We have this blind spot about Zionism, and we have it for very understandable reasons that we inevitably see it through the prism of the Jewish experience in Europe and the crimes of non-Jewish people. Israel is the product of the most appalling racism. At the same time, as a political project, it is a manifestation of the most appalling racism. In terms of the people it is inflicted upon, the Palestinian people, it is no different from previous settler colonial projects, Rhodesia, South Africa, Algeria. In fact, it's worse. It's more brutal because it has this spurious legitimization. And the Western world has to lose this blind spot it has about Israel, a state whose defining feature is that it is structured to ensure the domination of one ethnicity over another. Zionism is an ideology of ethnic supremacy. And until we confront that reality, we're never really going to be able to properly deal with it. In the wake of the genocide, one would hope that that enormously damaging weapon that could be wielded against the left, the accusation of anti-Semitism, has lost its potency. The veil has been stripped away from many of the people who were using it and exposed them as people who were essentially advocates for Israel. If there's one thing we've learned from the genocide, it is that the left must never again uncritically accept allegations of anti-Semitism. There are two issues the mainstream media is incapable of covering. One is the left. It is incapable of seeing divisions on the left as anything other than battles between goodies and baddies. The second issue is the issue of Israel. They're totally incapable of covering. And where these two things interact, mainstream media is a complete disaster. That's why you need Double Down News, and support it on Patreon, please.